I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Tom Alderson, the Leeds fan who is too doom-ridden to come with multiple introductions of the podcast, and I'll just let you know then that I'm joined by Dan Holdsworth and Martin Riley. Martin, how are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. Tried to forget about the result best I can, and it's been working and I haven't had a chance to eat yet, so that's probably going to affect my performance levels, but I'm okay otherwise. How about you?
Yeah, I'm not good. I've had a pretty bad day at work, and the only thing that cheered me up on Saturday was that I managed to get back to Stockport for the final whistle of the Stockport game, so I was kind of just in the pub surrounded by Stockport fans celebrating promotion, so that kind of took my mind off it a bit. Apart from I wandered into the pub, and the first thing I heard someone go is, "Bloody hell, Leeds lost." I was like, "You've got to be joking me. I'm in Edgeley. Like, why is someone looking at the Leeds score?" So, but yeah, that was good at least. But yeah, I was probably the maddest I've been at Elland Road for a while. I was absolutely raging at the end of that game. What about yourself, Dan? How are you?
I was raging at the game on Saturday. I almost left early, although I stopped on the stairs and watched the full-time whistle come. I was really angry. I never leave early. I hate people that leave early. Anyway, but today I'm fine. I've had a boring day at work and I've had chili con carne for dinner. So, you know, that helps. That helps lift you.
Yeah. Do a little bit of chili con carne. I had like a fish with some potatoes. So it was quite nice.
Fair enough. But the problem is my father-in-law's here, which is generally fine. I don't get on with fine. I've got to ask. But he's a Newcastle fan. So he's just coming, "What's happened to your football team?" So I had to explain it all to him tonight. And he's just like, "Can I just move on, mate?"
And then you've got to come on a podcast for an hour and talk about it as well to make it even better.
Yeah, sorry, it riled me up, so I'm angry now. I'm ready to rant on the podcast.
So we are here today to review the first loss at Elland Road this season, which was against Blackburn Rovers on Saturday, which was a 1-0 loss. We obviously normally do the news at this point. I don't think there's any Leeds United news outside the fact that we're probably not going to go up automatically or as champions. But anything else people want to discuss?
I can't think of anything, really. We discussed the finances last week, didn't we? Yeah, we did.
We did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, did the finances, did Stuart Dallas.
There's been rumours today that Leeds are going to re-sign Calvin Phillips on loan, which I sincerely hope are false. Because he's...
That's a great signing in the Championship, I think.
Yeah, I presume they're assuming if we go up.
Yeah, I don't know.
Don't buy old croc players. Please.
No.
For sentimental reasons. Just don't do it. Yeah.
No, we don't need that.
Yeah.
But I'd take him in the Championship. That's fine. As long as we're not paying his full salary.
£150,000 a week or whatever he's earning.
Yeah. Let's move on to the game summary then, because I'm sure you all want to relive this game. So Leeds approached the game in their usual 4-2-3-1, with Blackburn lining up in a 3-4-3 shape. For most of the first half, Leeds won the possession battle, with Blackburn happy to sit back and attack Leeds in transition. Leeds had the most of the chances but didn't create any big ones, however did look most likely to score despite the lack of clear-cut chances being created, with Blackburn only having one shot across the first half. Throughout the second half, Leeds continued to dominate possession, and a few good chances to score from but weren't able to open the scoring, and a true smash-and-grab style, Blackburn scored the only goal of the game in the 82nd minute, with them attacking on a corner and Sammy Smodux scoring past Melier to make the score 1-0. After the goal, Leeds continued to dominate possession and the chances, but weren't able to equalise, and the game ended with the first defeat at Elland Road this season in a 1-0 loss. Let's move on to the interrogation then. So, first things first, there's been quite a lot of head loss. I am definitely guilty of this, relating to this result, but attempting to put this result to a side for one moment, Would you say, Martin, that this performance was more down to a bad attacking performance or similar to the Sunderland game where the opponent had a good defensive setup to nullify us?
Probably say it's probably more to do with the attacking performance rather than Blackburn's shape being anything amazing. Because I do think that in both halves we did create chances which we could have scored from. And they weren't quite as solid as what Sunderland were in their shape. Sunderland really did have a very good setup to nullify us, and we really didn't create anything in that game at all. I know I wasn't on the review for that one, but it just didn't seem the same at all in this game. I think we did have chances where we could have scored, and we just didn't put them away. So it's not really a bad attacking performance in relation to creating chances. It's a bad attacking performance in relation to putting the chances away, which obviously is something which Leeds fans are used to. The last time we went up and the season before that, we also had problems in the area and could have put games away a lot sooner than what we did. And this was definitely one of those cases. We did create 3 big chances in this game and possibly 4th, because there was one shot from Junior Firpo, which didn't go down as a shot, which was strange.
Maybe they were so shocked that it was Junior Firpo they thought it wasn't a shot.
It's possible. I think it was because it kind of just looked like it hit him, and I think it hit his body rather than a body part, so it wasn't put down as a shot, more of a touch, which the goalkeeper saved. But if it had have gone in, they would have had to put it as a shot. So yeah, it should be a shot for me, even if it did come off his body. But yeah, so there was quite a few chances which we could have scored from, and I think Blackburn just took the one chance which they did have. And obviously Sammy Smodex is probably the best finisher in the league at the moment, the top scorer in the league, and he finishes a lot of his chances. So you give him one decent chance like that and he is going to score it. That's the end of the day. And we just didn't have the same sort of space to attack as what Blackburn had in that one moment. I don't think we had any chances which were close to that level of chance, although the XG will say so. The chances we had were all in a packed box, which made it difficult for us to get clean connections with them, and we just couldn't do better with them, unfortunately. So yeah, I don't think it was similar to the Sunderland game at all, and I was relatively happy with the way we attacked in this game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think my frustration on after the game wasn't because we didn't sort of make more chances than we did against Sunderland, because we definitely did. I think it's because we couldn't take those chances. I think Blackburn are a much worse team. Well, the table kind of says that they were a worse team than Sunderland, so we should be making chances. But to be fair, I think, like, I know it said in the game summary about it being a smash and grab, but I think Blackburn did kind of leave some players high to try and get that smash and grab, which Sunderland definitely didn't. Sunderland were like, we're going to sit in and get a 0-0. So Blackburn did try and win that game, I think, in the best way that they could, and it worked for them. So I think it's fair play to them on that front.
Well, I can say that, but the goal came from a goal kick. So it was just Roden didn't win the aerial battle. In that, if Roden won the aerial battle, it would have came to nothing. So, they did have a couple of players high. It was only just their striker, Smodix and Dolan. So, it's just those 3 men. So, it's just that attacking 3. Same number of...
It's worth saying they had a few attacks like that, though, didn't they? Where they almost got in and almost got a shot away that didn't generate XG, perhaps. I mean, there was one time early-ish in the game, maybe 20 minutes or so, where Ampadu got beat by Gallagher also. And then the ball came across and Firpo nipped in and cleared it. There was other chances where we gave the ball away. Some of them gave the ball away at one time, I think, on the halfway line. They did have a few long-range attacks that looked a bit like that, didn't they? So it wasn't the first attack of that type. So I mean, there was definitely like an element of the, you know, that was their definite way they were trying to win the game. Yeah, like you say, Toldo, I think I agree on that point.
We've had a question from Josie who asked, okay, serious question. Except for goals, I feel like we haven't been playing well for a while. Maybe since Chelsea, but that we have improved in our passing and defensive shape in the last 2 games. It feels like we're getting back to playing at our best level. Am I imagining this? I think she is, but Dan, what do you make of this?
I kind of think she's right. I see where she's coming from. I think she's 2/3 right. It's like defensively, we look solid again last 2 games. This looked like defensively, you know, one error this against Blackburn, really one biggish error cost us. Against Sunderland, we defended really well. So we've conceded maybe 1 XG over 2 games. I've not totted it up, but whatever, you know, like a small number over 2 games. So that feels like it's back to normal. I think the kind of the build-up from the back, not wow, but pretty solid. We're getting into the final third of the opposition. We're controlling the midfield. You know, we're kind of doing okay. So it kind of feels like we're almost there, but the final third plays poor, isn't it, in the last 2 games. I didn't see the Coventry game, but the Sunderland and Blackburn game, the final third play has been pretty poor. It kind of feels like when we've had bad spells, it feels like we've become a bit red bully and a bit compact and not really stretching teams and moving teams around too much. And this was a bit that way, and I think Sunderland was a little bit that way as well. So I kind of feel like, yeah, she's right. I can see what Josie's getting at, and I think it's a reasonable talking point. And if this was the middle of the season, we just had a draw and a loss, you'd be annoyed, but you'd think, oh, it's okay, we've got time to turn it around. The problem is it's happening at the wrong time, isn't it, really? That's my view on that.
Yeah, to be fair, I think I'd definitely agree with the defensive shape. I think we've looked pretty solid last two games. You could even argue that apart from a couple of times at Coventry, we were fairly solid in that game, I guess. The games tape probably plays more into that one, but I think there is an argument to say that we haven't played well for a while. Like I went for a run after work today, and I was kind of just for some reason I got my phone out and looked through the fixtures, and I think you can actually safely argue like since that Chelsea game we haven't been great, apart from maybe when we beat Millwall 2-0. Like I think even in that Stoke game when we won 1-0, I think Stoke had periods of possession on top. So yeah, it's just I think. The issue for me is with the attacking side of the performances is that we've said this many times in this podcast that there's nothing repeatable. It's dependent on individuals, and when the individuals aren't playing well, we're going to struggle to create chances, and that's just kind of biting us a bit in the last couple of games, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, just when I talked about this kind of Red Bull and compact, I've got like an example written down here. So this is on 54 minutes, and I've got I had a screenshot, and obviously can't share in a podcast, but like we've got Firpo entering like the left hand side of zone 14, so that's the kind of zone just outside the penalty box, so like the kind of attacking square zone. And within zone 14, we had Somerville, Nonto, Rutter, Gray, and Perot, and all the Blackburn defence, and both Blackburn defensive midfielders and wide players coming back. So that's almost the whole attacking and defensive game in a small box. There's no one in the kind of wide zone stretching play either side. There's no one running into zone 17, which is the penalty box, basically, trying to stretch the play that way. It was all very, and they're all kind of like Firpo carrying the ball, and they're all stood looking at him, waiting for him to pass the ball, and they're all static. And that was a big problem all game. The off-ball movement was terrible. It was all very cramped. You'd stop the video on the watch back, and you'd see Roberts, you know, the ball would be over in front of the East Stand on the left-hand side of the pitch, and Roberts and Nonto would be almost squashed over like in a Jesse Marsh team, you know, on the halfway line, on the midway point. I kind of feel like we're getting a bit, like when we play badly, it's when we kind of really end up in these kind of compact games, and I feel like we're getting drawn into that a little bit at the moment. So
it's almost a bit, that could potentially be, there's probably a couple of reasons for that, but one is that I feel like the personnel is probably a bit of an issue with that like Somerville likes to come to feet, Nonto likes the ball to his feet, Pirot definitely likes it to feet, and then like Rutter in these sort of games isn't going to run beyond him as much. I think he'll struggle to do that. Bamford was kind of the only one that would stretch a defence in that way. Dan James in certain games will stretch defence in that way, but when it's a low block, he doesn't really have that ability to. So I think the personnel we have kind of leads that way. And I can't imagine it's what Farke wants, but he might do. I don't know. I'd be surprised, though.
Yeah, I'd agree with a lot of what Dan said there. It has sometimes become a bit difficult for us to make these chances when players are all congested in this one area. And just going back to what Josie said, I would agree with most of what Josie said as well, same way what Dan said. But I'd also say you have to take into account the strength of the opposition. I mean, neither Sunderland or Blackburn are that anything special, right, or anything to write home about, and so they weren't able to create that much against us. So fine, we didn't let them create that many chances, but we shouldn't really, because we are one of the better teams in the league. We've got much better players than what they do overall. That's not me trying to be dismissive. That's the truth behind it. We've got a lot of high quality players on very high amounts of wages, and we should be able to shut these teams out. But then the same issue is that we're not creating as many chances against these sides as what we maybe should. And it's not the first time we've come across low blocks. We've had to deal with them throughout the season. But I think more this time of the season, it's different. The running is always puts that bit of extra pressure, bit of extra momentum needed for us to get results in these sort of games where teams are making things difficult for us. And I do think another element of Blackburn's play, which we haven't talked about yet, is I feel that they were purposefully giving away fouls, knowing how bad we are at set pieces. That the sort of feeling I had, yeah, it really did, because they felt that they were happy to give us set pieces, so happy to give us corners, happy to give us free kicks, because we don't have any strength in that area, so that it's better for them to disrupt our attacking sequences with fouls than it is to do anything else. So just allow us to have the ball, and we can more than likely create chances from open play than we wouldn't from set pieces, which I think probably leads nicely into the next question. So I'll let Taldo take that away.
I do have one question that I'd like to ask first, which isn't on the running order, so apologies. But I kind of thought about this in your answer to the first question, that you could sort of, not spin the wrong word, but you could maybe spin the Blackburn performance as an okay performance because we made chances, but then you could say, well, we didn't finish those chances. And it kind of comes back to what Dan said as well, that like, if that happened in the middle of the season, you'd be like, we're creating chances, this is great, but at this time of year, is it kind of more worrying that we're not finishing those chances, or is it still like a level of comfort that we are still making chances? What do you make of that, Martin?
Yeah, it's a very good point. It's this, like I mentioned, this time of the season is totally different to if we was having these performances midway through the season. You can say at that point, follow the process, we're still creating chances, they'll come back good, but we just don't have that luxury to be able to do that. And I do think that the pressure of this running is getting to the players. They're all quite mentally worn out because they've, in the situation and physically as well, they've all played a lot of games. So they've got that combination of the mental aspect and the physical aspect, which is, I think, leading to the players putting more on things and overthinking things, making the wrong decisions in the final third. So yeah, it contributes a lot towards it, and it's unfortunate that it's happening now, and I just hope that we can turn things around.
They're just shit bottlers. Get them out.
Let's move on to the next question then about set pieces, as you hinted, Martin. So, the question on the running order says, do you think we have a problem with our set pieces? But I'm just going to say, we have a problem with our set pieces. Let's talk about that. So, you've put quite a few stats on there, Martin. So, do you want to run us through what you've done in your research today?
So, first of all, we've taken 259 corners, which is the third most in the league. I don't have the numbers for attacking free kicks because on FBref it doesn't separate attacking free kicks from deeper free kicks, so I can't get those numbers. And for shot creating actions from dead ball situations, we're seventh in the league. So third most for corners, seventh most for shot creating actions from these dead ball situations.
Would that say to me that like our delivery isn't that terrible? It's not wow, but it's not terrible. Am I reading that right?
Well, it isn't quite the same. So we've created seventh most shot creating actions and third most corners. So it's a little bit less, but not worryingly less. So yeah, I'd agree with that.
The way I would interpret that though is we've had the third most corners and we've only made the seventh most shots.
So if anything,
we're having loads of corners.
True.
And we're not making many chances. So I would actually say maybe the delivery isn't that great. Maybe.
Yeah, but it's not massively bad.
It's not terrible, but it's not great.
But the worst stats is the ones next.
Oh, yeah. We're just warming up here.
Yeah. So the one after that, so the goal created action, so basically either the shot, so either the pass or the last two actions before the got the shot, basically. I'm butchering this totally. But goal creating actions from dead ball situations, joint second worst in the league with three goal creating actions created from dead ball situations. So that's pretty bad. So the fact that we've created seventh most shots, but only the second worst goal creating action, it's, yeah, not good at all. And then looking into the numbers behind them, so the set piece XG, this stat is from Opta the Analyst. The previous ones were from FBref, just to make our listeners aware. We are 11th for set piece XG and created 12.73 XG. However, we've underperformed that with 8 set piece goals. So that's 4.73 of underperformance, the second worst in the league. The only team who have underperformed more is Sheffield Wednesday, who are pretty bad. There's a lot of bad numbers there. And then the individuals behind who probably get the most from set pieces obviously will be our centre backs, Joe Roden and Ethan Ampadu. Joe Roden has 1.8 XG in total. I imagine the majority of that will be from set pieces because he won't really get many shots outside of those, and he hasn't scored any goals. Ampadu has 2.3 XG. He'll have some XG from open play because he has played in midfield, but not a massive amount. You know what his shots from open play are like. Smashes it from 25 yards and it goes miles over. And he got 2.3 XG. and has also scored 0 goals in the league. However, he did score 2 goals in the cup, so that's probably working against
him. So as long
as
we play Peterborough every week, we're great at set pieces.
Yeah, that's my takeaway. So, yeah, I think if we can play Peterborough some more, that would be very helpful for us. But yeah, the numbers themselves are not great.
I mean, one thing I want to sort of talk a little bit about is, I was kind of getting at this before, that the delivery isn't like appalling. And like a lot of people at the ground grumble about the delivery, and I don't think it's like appallingly bad. I'm not saying we've got any like, wow, superb set piece, but I think the bigger issue is the people like getting the end of things, or not getting the end of things, as the case may be. I mean, the only player we have in the squad who consistently can get on the end of things is Strike. Maybe Byram's okay, isn't he? And that's it. Like, Bamford's bad in the air. Like, Rodon is a 50p head. Ampadu never gets anywhere near things. I mean, we've just got too many of our bigger players don't get anywhere near it. Rutter, I mean, yeah. Have you seen him connect with a set piece, ever?
I can't even think. That picture just doesn't work in my head.
No, it doesn't compute, does it? So, yeah, I'm just thinking, the bigger guys, the guys that you think have got a bit of physicality and athleticism to get on stuff. There's only really Pask that can do it consistently, and obviously we're missing him. So I think it's more about set-piece creativity and set-piece like movement in the box than a delivery issue, although I think we could do with a better set-piece taker, definitely, like next transfer window. But, yeah, I want to pin this more on Fark than, not the Fark, but the I suppose the coaching team, that they haven't worked out any kind of interesting routines, and they haven't coached like ways of getting players onto the end of things rather than the delivery, would be my take on this.
Yeah, I think that's a fair response. Like, you've seen, I'm trying to think which team it was yesterday, today or the day before, that it's possible to have good set pieces and not have a load of giants in the air who are good on the ball. Like, you can do routines. Yeah, Newcastle. I'm probably Brentford, either. Like, they're another example of that.
Well, they're
like,
giants, though, don't they, Brentford? But yeah.
Yeah, actually, yeah. But
you can't be creative with set pieces, though. Yeah, exactly. Without big guys.
Whereas, like, it just feels like Somerville just... I was sat in the cheese wedge on Saturday. It was like every time he was in front of me taking a corner, he just looped it in and then the ball got cleared. Or, like, we were better just passing it to hit Nonto and then those two trying figuring it out. There wasn't anything clever going on by the looks of it. It's just get the ball in there and hope, isn't it, to an extent.
I mean, there were a couple of occasions where the kind of ball got through and sort of caused a bit of danger. I think there was one early in the first half in front of the South Stand.
I thought you could have said the season then.
Yeah. So there were some that got in there. And then, so there was one situation where we put a corner in. It was kind of come out quite low and it kind of bobbled through and caused a bit of danger and then went out from another corner. The second one was lofted and the keeper came and claimed it really easily. Now, it's really funny. The two guys that sit behind me, they grumble like about corners and they said, that was crap about the first one that almost caused a goal mouth situation. And then the second one looped up, that's better. And the keeper just cleared it. So I'm just like, I think people are clueless about what a dangerous set piece is. The problem is when you loft it, good defenders clear it. You've got to try and whip it in close to the near post. More of those balls are going to be cleared, aren't they? Because it's a harder thing to do. But the ones that do get through are going to be more dangerous, aren't they? So unless you've got like someone who can hit it kind of with that kind of trajectory that's kind of quite low and whippy, a lot of set corners are going to be cleared, aren't they, anyway, I think.
I think another issue with this is that it's not enough variation, like you've said. There needs to be a lot more short corners being attempted, because it's obvious by this point that we don't have the attackers to score goals from headers. Unless we've got Pascal Strauch in the side or at a push, Liam Cooper, we don't have attackers who can score goals from set pieces. We just don't. Maybe you could also say the same for Luke Ayling. He's also pretty reasonable at set pieces, but obviously he's not even with us anymore. So if you haven't got the attackers to score from headers, why are we continuing to whip it into the box? We've got many players who can dribble. Put it short, get them dribbling past a man, try to get a low ball in.
Yeah, I'll just change the angle. You know, if some of the players, it's Nonto, they can turn and take it towards the penalty box and whip it in from that different angle and, you know, aim for the far, like almost like a shot come across at the far stick and see if you can get something on it, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Or whatever, yeah, yeah, exactly. Vary it up, those kind of things. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, there's other variation that we could try to do, and that part you can put on Fark. But the actual creation of set pieces and not scoring from them, obviously that is on the players who are attacking them, they're just not good at doing it. But I would like to see a lot more short corners attempted, because that would suit our strength a lot more than what we're currently doing.
Did you have a stat on Strauch's XG, Martin? I feel like we were talking about this in the group chat today. Was it not around the same as Rodon's or Ampadu's? Obviously, over the last game.
Strauch.
A bell?
Strauch has got, 1 second, 2.8 XG, so more, and he's played a lot less games than that they've played. He's played 22 90s, Roden's played 38, and
so he's got,
where is Ampadu?
He's got similar XG.
Ampadu's got 43.
He's got similar XG from
got fewer
more
games.
XG. Yeah, yeah, from fewer shots. He's got, so he's got like 2.02 XG, two goals from 13 shots. Roden's got 2.06 XG, no goals from 21 shots. So Ampadu, Strike's getting more chances per 90, and the better each chance is a better quality, a higher XG.
Yeah, and he's also scored 3 goals from 2.8, so he's slightly overperforming his XG as well. So he's the only one who has been able to consistently score from, not consistently, but he has been able to score chances from set pieces. So yeah, when he's on the pitch, it's fine to, with the ball in, but we have someone who can, at least one person who can attack them, but we just don't have anyone else.
It's not mad to say that if he'd stayed fit, he'd be, you know, there's a good chance he'd be on 6-7 goals this year, which is great.
Yeah,
would be fantastic numbers for a centre-back, and would put us up, would probably boost those numbers overall in terms of our set-piece proficiency, just by having that one guy there.
Definitely.
Maybe you nick a goal in one of the two games this week, and that's like...
It's 2-3 points over the season. Yeah. Puts us top, maybe.
Yeah. Johnny Cooper put a tweet out, which may cause PTSD for some of our listeners, so feel free to skip ahead if you want to avoid that, but... His tweet said the following: Blackburn today with the fewest shots, 3 on record in a game to beat Leeds United at Elland Road. They also had the fewest successful passes with 110 in a win over Leeds since Wigan in February 2020 with 100. Not that it matters, but God, that's annoying. They weren't good. Which, yeah, they weren't great, but I do think some people are doing Blackburn a disservice, but yeah, they weren't amazing. The question from all that is, should we just swallow this one as shit happens in football, and or can we still gain automatic promotion? Or would you say that we now have bottled it and we should accept the playoffs and all that it brings, Dan?
I've got a beef with the phrase bottled. I mean, what do people mean? Like, they're kind of like implying some kind of mental deficiency. Teams lose.
It means we should win every game from now until the end of the season. If we don't, we've bottled it.
Imagine a team, a favourite team in a football match, not winning it. It's never been seen before.
Look,
there are millions of reasons.
Like 5 times this weekend.
Well, yeah. There are I'm not saying pressure is not a thing. I'm not saying that there aren't players at Leeds that are mentally deficient under pressure or whatever. But I just don't know. And there are millions of other just as equally plausible explanations as why we lost. I mean, we lost this match because it was a type of game we've lost a lot this season, like against a low block team. We struggled with low block teams. We struggled with West Brom and Preston at Christmas, didn't we? We struggled with Sunderland twice, once at Christmas, early this week. You know, those reasons are just as likely as the players are bottling it. I've got a bit of a beam about it, about bottling. I think like morons say it all the time and they don't know what they're saying.
I think if I was going to try and put a definition on bottled it, I would say that we did bottle it this week against Sunderland and Blackburn because we should have won those games. But I wouldn't say we bottled it away at Coventry. Because Coventry
is
good.
What does bottling actually mean, though?
It means you don't win a game that you probably heavily favoured. Is probably the way I'd say it. That's not the way most people use bottled it, though. I would agree with you, and I don't like the way people use it.
It's implying some kind of mental breakdown. You can see it in some sports. You can watch a snooker match and a guy got to pieces and just absolutely shank the ball everywhere in the final frame of a world title match or a tennis game, tennis match where you can't serve anymore, whatever. But in football, there's just so many variables. It's just so hard to pin down unless somebody's actually making errors that obviously lead to goals that they wouldn't normally make. You know, Liam Coop, no, he normally makes it. You know, the Derby game, I guess, in the playoff, that had a feeling of bottling it, didn't it? Because
that's fair.
The errors were ridiculous, but we didn't see anything like that in this game. We just saw a team come unstuck in a way they've come unstuck before. That's just football, isn't it?
Yeah. Can we still gain automatic promotion?
Yes. Yeah, win all 3. I mean, 7 points probably does it, because, you know, I don't expect Leicester or Ipswich to have a 100% record. They'll give us an opportunity at some point. Whether we take it, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's probably the only thing that's keeping me not completely flying off at the moment, is that Leicester and Ipswich are probably as bad as we are at the moment.
Seems that way, yeah.
Ipswich might be slightly better than us, but yeah. Or Southampton are good, aren't they? That's great. That's a new addition. Leeds to come fourth in a three-horse race. Martin, what do you make of all this?
So, yeah, I'm with Dan. I don't really like the term bottling it. It's overused, and more often than not, it's not used in how they're thinking they should be using it. So, yeah, I don't like the term. I would say that this result in particular is closer to us bottling it, if you want to use the term, which I don't like to use it. But still, like Dan said, we've had these games before where we've come unstuck against a team we should be beating, and it happens a lot in football. They're only saying it because it's at this time of the season. And yeah, we may have bottled it, but we won't know. That will determine at the end of the season if we are in automatic promotions or if we do lose 1-0 to Norwich in the semi-finals of the playoffs. So,
but that I'm assuming we're going to finish third, Martin.
No, I think there's too much. It's too much shit has happened so far in these run-ins with all the teams involved in them. So I just don't think you can predict anything at the moment. There is every chance that we finish in automatics. There's every chance we finish in the playoffs. So I think there's too much chaos, and anyone who says they can try to predict it is an idiot. You can't predict this. It's football, and this time of the season especially, it's even more chaotic than what it normally is. So just have to roll with it and just see if we can make improvements, and if this could be our Forest game where we show some reaction like we've wanted after the past two games, to be honest. But fingers crossed this is the final worst part of it and we go back on a rise, and we can easily win these next three games if that happens. So let's just see what happens.
You could argue that the Middlesbrough game will play more into our hands because the Middlesbrough probably won't sit in like Sunderland and Blackburn did, so maybe that we might see a reaction there. That's another thing that's trying to make me feel better.
I think all our remaining fixtures suit us better than the last two, three games. Cause I think QPR will play a bit. I think Fuentes has got them playing a little bit. And Southampton will come and play. So, yeah, I think all our three remaining games suit us better than the last three, for sure. I mean, the last time a team came to us and had a go was Hull. And we, you know, generated loads of XG and didn't left. Yeah, but, like, for all they played well and we didn't like it, like, we put up 2.9 XG to their 0.6. Had all the big chances, you know. I'm more confident playing Hull now than I would be playing Coventry again, for example.
Oh God, yeah, without a doubt. In a world where we do make the playoffs, though, or fail to get promoted automatically, Martin, Sam Thompson has asked. Sam, I hope isn't like a famous Sam Thompson. Probably not him. How do we win the playoffs with our current tactics?
First of all, I think playoffs tactics kind of go a little bit out of the window, and anything can happen in these fixtures. We saw that in the last playoffs that we had. We were pretty comfortable in the first game against Derby, and then it all went tits up in the second half.
We were comfortable in the first half against Derby in the second leg.
Yeah, exactly.
Last couple of minutes.
Exactly. And so I just see it's strange to say in a podcast which focuses on tactics, but it's just going to be chaos, I think. But I do think that we do have the better individuals in our squads compared to the squads who will be in the playoffs. But we also are potentially coming up against two sides who have caused us problems. So it could go either way. If our individuals can have big games in those games, then the tactics won't really mean a whole lot, and the individuals will win it for us. But equally, the tactics of, let's say, West Brom, Coventry, they're the worst sides come against us. We've not beaten either of them. So yeah, that's going to be a fun one. I'm hoping it's ended up. If we finish in third, it'll be a team in seventh, right? I think that's right. Who are playing in the semis?
Oh,
six.
To be Norwich. I think Norwich have got quite a big cushion now in seventh. So
they beat Preston on Saturday, yeah. So I think they're pretty much in it. Maybe Hull could catch them. I think that's the only team.
I think Hull can get within 6 points. Or they're within 6 points, but there's like three games to go. It just feels like a big swing. I'd be shocked if it's not Norwich.
So either way, we will most likely be playing either Norwich or Hull. Hull's the only one who could get ahead of Norwich, but it would take a big push from Hull to get there. So I think Norwich suits us more. We've won both the games against Norwich. So I think that would probably be a pretty favourable setup for us. I think I will be quite confident against Norwich. But then the final against either Coventry or West Brom, that would be a lot more terrifying for me. Southampton.
Leicester or Ipswich.
Or Ipswich, who knows?
Well, exactly, yeah.
I think the top six is done. I'd be very surprised if it's anyone other than Norwich, West Brom, Southampton, Leeds, Leicester, Ipswich. It's just the order, isn't it? Like, the only thing I'm certain about is West Brom coming fifth.
That's the only... because Norwich are 1 point behind West Brom.
So they are. All right.
That snuck up onto me as well.
And Coventry could catch Norwich, actually. Coventry are in it, but Coventry have a game in hand on Norwich, and if they win that game in hand, they'd be on 66, so they'd be 5 points behind Norwich with three games to go. So, yeah, it's quite a big ask, isn't it?
Yeah. So Norwich looks like they've got pretty easy games. So
chances are we get Norwich, which isn't a bad matchup, although they do have good players. But that's proved to be a fairly good matchup for us. West Brom's proved to be a difficult matchup. Southampton was difficult, but in theory, Southampton should be an all right matchup for us. In theory. Let's see how it goes in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is.
Yeah. And like we battered Ipswich, both legs, and we beat Leicester at home. We did play very well away. So, yeah. I think the one thing, just to try and focus on the more sort of tactic side, is I think we are defending well, and I think that will get you through two legs. Without if you're not conceding many chances over two legs, you're probably gonna. I would back Leeds to have the individuals to score more over two legs. I'd like to think so. Playoff final is its own beast, isn't it? Like you just whatever happens. And if we do have to preview that game, I'm just gonna say vibes for 45 minutes and then like just end the podcast. I'm not gonna even try and dig into it. But we're a long way from that at the moment. I hope.
And we also don't have Kiko Casilla in goal, so. That helps us.
Yeah, I could make a comment there that Darren would really hate, but I'm not going to do. And I actually wouldn't mean it, but it would still be funny.
Do it. Say it.
No,
say it.
No. Darren knows enough what I've tried to say, and that'll annoy him just enough. Before we move on to the second half of our analysis, we're going to go for a quick ad break. But before that happens, I am going to plug the Patreon. Don't worry, patrons, you don't have to listen to this part. Our patrons get access for as little as £1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts. And if you want to pay a little bit more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts. If you want to find out more about our Patreon, where do they need to go, Martin?
Patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's move on to the second half of the analysis then. So I think probably a bit of a turning point in the game was the raft of changes which Farke made. So in the 69th minute, Byron Bamford and James came on for Roberts, Greve and Rutter, followed in the 80th minute by Joseph coming on for Nonto. Do you think these subs had a positive impact, Dan, or was this an example of the 3-1 fuck it, which we've seen, which Darren Driver keeps saying in our group chat and we've seen quite a few times this season?
I didn't like it watching it, and I didn't like it in the watch back, but actually statistically we made most of our XG in this period after they came on. Our biggest chance was to Bamford, which kind of hit his shoulder from a corner. I think that was our biggest statistical chance, and I think we made a little bit over half our XG after those players came on in the 70th, 68th minute, something like that. So in terms of potency we had a bit more in that period, but it was a bit of a chaotic mad spell. But I think what happened was it made the game more chaotic overall, and they seemed to have a bit more opportunities, more threat going the other way, because obviously Archie Gray was on his own in midfield, and the gaps in that area were way bigger, and we lost control. So I didn't like it, but I think it's just worth pointing out we did have some chances in that period, and we did have some danger. Dan James did hold width a little bit, which I think helped a little bit in terms of attacking play, a tiny amount. But yeah. Basically, I agree that it wasn't great. I'd rather us continue to control the game.
I would agree with that. You can definitely say we made more chances in that period. I didn't actually look into that, but that's fair. I think you see quite often, though, and it's like this is just a lead thing, just across games, that as the teams get more and more deep, the pressure kind of just gets to them. And if they can't get out because we've got a good setup, then that is probably as likely to bring chances as just bombing players on. And then you're pushing more for the 3 points, but you are giving up that 1 point as well. So it also, definitely felt like we lost control of that point as well. So I wasn't really happy with that, the way the impact that had. But what do you make of it, Martin?
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat to what Dan was. We did create a lot of chances in that time. It did also lead us to losing some control in deeper areas. For the goal, it was just, the shape was just dreadful. There was, when the ball was knocked on by their striker, and the space which Smodics was able to run into was just totally open. I don't know where Sam Barron was in that situation. I think he must have pushed further forward, and that just left acres of space, and it just we couldn't track his run well. I think Archie probably missed that, but he was on his own in midfield, and I think Gruev was doing a good job at handling Smodic. I think if he had been left on the pitch rather than Gray, I feel that we may have done better in that situation, and we may well have at least had someone closer to Smodic when he was making that run, who he maybe could have put him off a little bit, and it maybe as I'm saying maybe here because who knows, but that is potential could have made a difference for us. So I think rather than the subs themselves, the attacking subs, I think it was that deeper change and choosing to leave Gray on the pitch rather than Grev, who was handling the defensive battle a lot better. And he made a couple of very, very good interceptions and tackles, which were pretty big moments. And if he hadn't have made them, it could have led to Smodic being one-on-one with goalkeeper at one point. So yeah, that part I didn't like. And I also didn't like Nonto being taken off, because he was most definitely our biggest threat in this game. And he created all of our big chances, if I recall correctly. He was the one who whipped in the ball for Bamford for his header. He was also the one who whipped in the ball for Firpo's non-shot, which was probably as big of a chance as Bamford's one if it had gone down as an XG chance. So yeah, I think that one was the bigger thing. Probably, I'm not sure what Fark said about that as to why he took Nonto off. I would guess it was down to fitness. But for me, he's already been on the pitch for 80 minutes. What difference would another 10 minutes have made by that point?
I really hope it was a medical decision, because it's nuts if it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny, I've got a pal who's a Blackburn fan. He was messaging me today and he was raving about Nonto. From opposition perspective, he's the guy that worried him the most. So yeah, and that says all really.
Yeah, the Nonto was very good in this game, and he was the one who was creating everything, especially when he moved, because when Dan James came on, he took over the right-hand side and he was kind of playing as a secondary attacking midfielder over off the left. So you had Somerville and him both on that left side, which is a very dangerous combination. And I think he probably could have got away with leaving Nonto on the pitch for the rest of it. And yeah, well, then it could have well been different. But that wouldn't have changed anything in regards to the defensive part of it and conceding the chance that we did.
Do you think the gamble was needed by Fark Martin, considering we probably did need to win this game or not?
I think so, yeah. I think we did need to try to win the game. But like Dan mentioned, we could well have continued creating the same chances at that point in the game with leaving us with more control and maybe not throwing on as many attackers as what we did. Yeah, I could see bringing Bamford on because he stretches the game differently. And although I don't think Perreault had a bad game, as contrary to a lot of fans, I don't think he had a bad contribution. He was doing a good job of linking up play, but he wasn't stretching the pitch, so I couldn't understand why Bamford had to come on to make that happen. But potentially Perreault could be the one to be taken off there, despite him having a reasonable game, in my opinion. So I think if we would have made a different change than what we did, it could well have been more beneficial, and we could have kept control as well as not sacrificing the defensive stability that we had in the game. So there were other things that we could have done, I think, other than what we did to have that gamble, but at the same time, be responsible in the back.
I mean, if you're going to go ultra attacking and, you know, like push your fullbacks up, which we kind of did at that point late on, you know, Byron was way high, wasn't he? Firpo was high. Like, leave two centre mids and at least have some kind of semblance of a solid block through the middle, and, you know, have players there that can cover wide areas. Perhaps, you know, centre mid can step out and become a fullback or whatever in a rest defence type situation. You know, so just don't take Grove off. Just keep Grove and Gray for the midfield and you know, sacrifice somewhere else, but still have that kind of solid playing part in the middle of the field. Blackburn weren't offering much down the width, were they? Their counter attacks were all central anyway, so don't sacrifice the middle where their big threat is. I mean, I'd rather just like you said, Tolder, just kind of continue to probe away and just pressure them and just, you know, change the personnel, freshen it up. Like, Dan James is a different kind of profile to the wingers. Bring him on just to change the profile, but still within the kind of structure of the game. And it just, you know, bring Bramford on for Perreault for a different kind of threat, but within the same kind of structure. That's how to do it. Not just completely utterly wrecky structure like that. I mean, I guess he's done it a few times and it's worked for us, hasn't it, this season? So I guess we had to lose one at some point when he does it. But
we saw a midfield pivot of Gray and Gruev in this game. Dan, how do you think they did? And do you think that Kamara could have potentially offered more alongside Gruev than Gray did?
I thought Gray was okay. I mean, I don't think he had a great game, but I don't think he did anything wrong, really. Perhaps on the goal, could have done more covering. But I thought Gray was fine. No worse than Kamara has been in some of his lower quality game. So I don't think it was a big drop off from Kamara. Perhaps Kamara gives you a little bit more stability than Gray. Gray does tend to burst forward a little bit. You know, he's got that natural kind of box-to-box instinct in him, hasn't he? He wants to burst forward. But we kind of, some of us want that as well. So I wasn't overly worried about the centre mid until there was one of them. Only one of them left.
What about you, Martin?
Yeah, I like some aspects of it. But I do think that the one part which Kamara has over Gray is progression and picking the right moments to progress the ball. That's one thing which he's shined at and done really well with getting the ball forward. And he's got a good relationship with the left side of attack. He's got a great relationship with Firpo and Somerville. So he just naturally knits things together a bit more comfortably than what Gray does. I don't think, like Dan said, Gray had a bad game, but I also don't think he had that great of a game either. He didn't really do a whole lot. He wasn't really carrying the ball at all, which is quite unlike him. He had 0 progressive carries in this game, which is very unlike him. He's usually one who has a fair amount of progressive carries. By contrast, even Mbadu had 7. And even Gruev had 1. And that's not really his role. So I felt that part of the game in midfield, it kind of passed Archie by a bit, and he didn't really contribute much in that respect. So I do think that potentially the sub to make could have been to take Gray off and bring Kamara on. That could well have changed things in different perspectives and would maybe have contributed to more threat going forward than what the ultra-attacking 3-1 fuck it ended up being. So it's just, I'm not a big fan of the bringing on all your attackers. It's something which I do on Football Manager when I'm trying to win a game. And there should be more to it than that. There should be thinking of how you can change the profiles that you've got in the squad to more solidify the overall approach that you've got, rather than just throwing everyone on and hoping for the best, which just seems where it would be in this one. Yeah, it's worked in some games, but it's going to work when you throw on a bunch of elite attackers for the division. So, yeah, I don't think this midfield worked that well, but I also do want to see more of Gray in midfield because that is long-term his role. But I'm just maybe thinking that maybe this setup isn't getting the best out of him, and he probably works best in the midfield 3. So you would have, say, Gruev as the deepest midfielder, and maybe even Gray alongside Kamara work as a option. But above that, it would give Gray more license to get forward and try to make penetrative runs into the box, something which he does for the England setup. In the youth setup, he's shined quite well in that as the right-sided box-to-box player and had some good link-ups with the attacking players and making runs into the half space. So that's the sort of thing that I want to see from Gray, and hopefully long-term that is the kind of thing that we see in the squad as well. That is generally what Farker prefers his midfield setup to look like. It would generally have more 8/10s rather than all-out 10s. But obviously the nature of this squad doesn't really lend to that. You can't really sacrifice an attacker when you've got as many good attackers as what we've got. So it makes sense that that's what he's gone with. But I suppose this topic is more something for the summer when we're hopefully preparing for the Premier League.
Strong agree on Gray. That's what I want to see from Gray. I want to see the squad go in that direction. I'm hoping it does go in that direction, generally, if we go up, or even if we stay down.
In hindsight, that might be nice to see against Watford and let Rutter fully recover. Hindsight.
Yeah, or Nonto at 10, if you want to carry on with the formation as it's been. Nonto can play central.
Yeah.
Oh, he was cracked, wasn't he? Oh, wait, whatever.
Yeah, but yeah. Dan, who do you think like stood out as having a good game in this one then?
Gruev and Nonto. Nonto had a couple of sloppy moments where passes didn't quite come off, but he was trying things. But generally speaking, he was our most potent attacker. And I thought Gruev kind of kept the ball moving nicely midfield and defensively was pretty strong against Smodics, as Martin's already said. I thought Gruev had a good defensive game against Sunderland, actually. I thought he handled Bellingham quite well when he dropped off as well. I think Gruev and Nonto probably our best two players. No one else stood out particularly beyond those
definitely
two.
Agree on Nonto. I think I did the same against Sunderland. I think Firpo was solid again, and I think that's like maybe that's the bare minimum for Firpo, but I don't think he was bad. I think he added in attacks again, so he's probably the only one I could stand out, unless you can think of someone, Martin.
I want to shout out Ethan Ampadu. I thought he had a very good game in this one, especially if we're trying to get us forward from the back. He was making quite a lot of good carries in central areas and escaping ball out of pressure. Joe Roden most did really well as well, but other than the one moment where he was beaten in the air for the goal, which is unfortunate. I think other than that, he had a really good game. And I just want to give a little shout out to Georgie as well, because I felt in the first half especially, he was doing really well at driving forward from midfield areas. And he was very good at picking his moments when to do that, especially in the first half. He didn't miss with a single one of his take-ons in this game. He completed 4 out of 4 of them, and he was fouled 3 times as well. So he was getting a lot of attention from the opposition and drawing a lot of fouls. And obviously those free kicks that we won didn't come to anything, but that's a topic we've already done to death on this pod. But yeah, I felt like he had a reasonably good game. But then obviously he was taken off because in the second half he wasn't as effective. But I also agree with what was said there about Nonto. He was the best player on the pitch. He actually won more fouls than what Routier did. He won 4 fouls in this game, and he was definitely my player in the match. He easily could have created a couple of goals in this game, and it just didn't happen, unfortunately. But yeah, those are the ones who I'd pick out.
Who would you point out as particularly struggling then?
For me, I would have to say, I didn't think Roberts had that great of a game. I felt his deliveries into the box were pretty bad at times. There was quite often overhit and just not really going to anyone. There were a few moments where he was making some good runs and he wasn't picked out. And I think that was something which few players were guilty of not picking out when he's making these nice runs. He likes to make those nice half-based runs, which quite often can come off really well if he's picked out in them. But those weren't picked out. But overall, I don't think he had a good game. And I don't want to say Somerville, but he wasn't really at his best in this game. I felt like he made the wrong decision in a few moments. So the few moments where he was cutting inside onto his right foot, and rather than taking a shot, he was passing the ball on. So I felt that was quite unlike him, and I don't think he had that great of a game either. Those are the two that I pick out.
What about you, Dan?
Those are the two I've got written down here. I've got Cry. Cry was off it. A couple of misplaced passes. He was like trying to like play Firpo in on the outside and was just overhitting the pass or not quite getting the angle right. Just one of those off days, really. A load of people have had a weird kind of head loss about him, haven't they, the last few days? Online, it's just like, he just had a bit of an off day. Chill, everybody. He's been great. He's a lot
player of the season.
Best player in the championship, according to the EFL, whoever it was.
Yeah, so what do they know?
Yeah, what do they know? Roberts, I've got here. I didn't like Roberts. And I was actually really happy to see Roberts come in. I said that in the group chat. I was happy with the team selection, but yeah, it kind of didn't work. There was one particular case where we worked the ball really nicely in the first half, and he overlapped and went to do a cross and just boom, ballooned it out for like a throw-in at the other touchline. It was like really annoying. I mean, he was obviously mad with himself, but it was that kind of day from him, I think. I still think we should stick with him and give him a run, but he didn't have a good game.
Yeah, they were the two for me as well. I think for me, it wasn't like, no one like dropped a stinker in this one. Like, it was definitely the attacking unit wasn't good. So yeah, I haven't really got anything else to add on what you've said about Roberts and Somerville, but I think it was I might say Somerville struggled. Daniel Farke, that's probably who I'd say struggled the most in this match by pretty long shot, really. Like, we didn't have, and that's not just this game; it's probably a season long thing in these sort of games. But
yeah, I didn't think Bamford or Joseph added anything when they came on, but Joseph only got 10 minutes, so what can you do? Bamford looked a little bit rusty. You know, was that a good chance that he kind of let hit his shoulder rather than head it down? But
yeah,
I don't tend to be too harsh on subs. It's not really always an easy thing to do, is it? Come on and be a sub and be great straight away.
It's not Bamford's game being a sub,
no,
is it really?
Not really, no.
It doesn't suit his strengths at all.
Not at all.
I think I'll move on to the last question about this game then. So at the end of the last two pods, we've called for calm, and it's getting less and less calm, I think, as time goes on. So how are you both feeling about the remainder of the season? And have you booked your tickets to London, to Wembley yet? So, Martin, I'll start with you.
So, yeah, it's as often as I said, I do feel earlier, like I said, that there's a lot that can happen yet. So I don't think we should full on accept playoffs as a foregone conclusion. There's still 3 games left. All the teams in this battle having a bad spell. So yeah, we could have taken advantage of their poor spell in the past few games, but who's to say that their poor spell doesn't continue and we can take advantage in some of the next games. So it's still so tight at the top of the table that anything can really happen now, so I don't think we can rule it out. So also at the same time, think that our chances have dropped a fair bit in this, because this was probably our easiest game which was left of the season. I do think fixture difficulty can get thrown out the window at this time of the season a bit, so sometimes you think we should be doing well in are the ones which we don't do well in, and the games that we shouldn't be doing that well in are games that we do well in. So it, there's a lot that can happen in this, and I think we just need to go along for the ride and see what happens and just try not to stress too much about it. Obviously, Leeds fans will stress because Leeds fans, what they love to do.
What about you, Dan?
I think on the last, I mean, Jamie in the Discord said today that in the last pod I said if we lose this game, Park can get in the sea. I think I said that on the last podcast. So
yeah,
I suggest he gets himself to Scarborough right now. I'm not confident about the team right now, but like it's so like an early goal in the next game and like an opportunity to counter on a team, an open team like Middlesbrough. I might change my mind very quickly and I might get confident all of a sudden. So it's such a fragile thing, isn't it? This like funk we're in, but good form's equally as fragile and good form's equally quickly around the corner. So yeah, like Martin says, it's the other teams are looking pretty fragile. We win the next game and, you know, Leicester draw the next game and all of a sudden we'll be cock-a-hoot, won't we, again? So it's probably just, like Martin says, just strap in for the ride and see how it goes. And yes, I do have hotel booked for Wembley, just in case.
I've kind of managed to talk myself around today to feeling from, like, I don't think we're going to win another game of football too. I don't think we're going to get automatics, but I'm feeling a bit more positive than I was definitely on Saturday, but even better than this morning. I think my issue now, as I've got the table up in front of me, is that Ipswich do have a 2-point lead on us, and I know, I think on goal difference we would pip them, but there isn't a lot of games to build up to make up a 2-point difference when you're not playing very well. Leicester have a 1-point lead, they've got a game in hand, so like the odds are definitely against us for getting automatics now, and we're not playing like a team that is going to get those points. But like you say, I think the Middlesbrough game is probably, I know they're a good team, but they play in a way which might suit us a bit more. And it's like, yeah, we get an early goal, we go there and win. Suddenly we're like, well, we could win the next two games and win the league. So yeah, it could easily change, but I would definitely lean more towards that. I don't think we will get automatics, but I don't think it's out of the question.
Yeah, that's basically my position. Yeah.
I'll probably go and book a hotel for the playoffs, though, now that you mentioned that, Dan.
I'm being a bit disingenuous there. We're having a family weekend there, and the wife has said, if you happen to be at a match, that's fine. Get yourself off for the Sunday. So,
yeah. So I feel like I could do it in a day.
Yeah, we're going down for a few days.
I did have a worry earlier in the season that I would have to, because you know, like traditionally the playoff finals are done Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah.
I was worrying that I would have to go to two playoff finals that weekend. And luckily, at least I'm not going to have to go to more than one. It would be costly and disappointing, probably. But yeah, strap in, guys. There's going to be twists and turns, yeah.
I keep having this thing that it's going to be a little bit like the year we got promoted under Grace from League One, and we have to do it on the last day. It'll be chaotic.
Bristol Rovers, yeah.
And like Firpo gets sent off or something like Gradle did or something silly like that. I might have said it before. I've got this idea in my head, it's going to be last day and it's going to be really mad and chaotic last day. So
I think we should get Paul to make a poll on our Discord about who's going to get sent off on the last day before we win and we go up as champions.
Yeah. Nanto is the man, is he?
Yeah, so, I don't know.
He'll get involved. He's got a bit of a side to him, hasn't he?
A bit of a nibble about him, hasn't
he? Yeah, he can get involved in daft stuff, can't he? Like Gradle could.
Yeah. Let's end on a bit of positivity then. So we were quite successful in the EFL Awards with Archie Gray winning Young Player of the Season and Apprentice of the Season. I didn't even know he won that. I didn't know that was an award. But anyway, Somerville picked up Player of the Season and Ampadu, Somerville and Rutter win the overall Team of the Season. I'm sure this has made you feel great, Martin.
Yeah, my boy is in the Team of the Season. So yeah, I'm absolutely ecstatic for him. He definitely 100% deserves his inclusion in the squad. He's definitely been the most fun attacker in the league. You can't argue that if you watch him play, even for a couple of games. He's just constantly looking to get the ball forward and trying to create things. So yeah, I'm just overjoyed for him and for Somerville and for Ampadu. They've just all done so well. And obviously Archie is just a phenomenal talent who we should be very lucky to have. Who's going to will probably end up getting us a lot of money in the future when we do eventually sell him, because yeah, he is going to be sold in the future.
No, he's going to lift the Champions League at Leeds, Martin. Come on.
Well, fingers crossed that
they're never going to hold a final at Elland Road. Come on. Oh, you mean Leeds going to be there? Right.
They all deserve what they've picked up from those awards. Yeah, 100%. I'm very happy for them all.
I think my only slight annoyance was that Ampadu was lined up as centre-back when I don't think he's played as centre-back more than he's played in midfield. But that's just like a touchy thing. I suppose.
A lot of people like equate his move to centre back with Leeds as great 2024, don't they?
Yeah,
incorrectly, but well, not completely incorrectly, but you know, it's not that simple.
Yeah,
and so there's that, isn't there? I mean, but anyway, whatever. I'm just glad he's in it because I think he's perhaps the best player in the league. Ampadu is my view, but anyway.
I think there's arguments though, like Ampadu, Somerville, Rutter at different points this season have been the best player in the league.
Yeah,
it was pretty hard for me to pick out who deserved that. Like when you throw like other players like Dewsbury Hall in as well.
Yeah, it's been true of Dewsbury Hall, hasn't it, at times as well.
Yeah.
Leicester as well, so
yeah. So it's going to be really sad when we don't get promoted and they all leave, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think that's a good place to leave it then. So yeah, that's all for tonight. We will be back at some point this week because we've got until next Monday for the Borough game, so we'll record a preview for that this week. But before we go, I'll do a quick reminder for the Patreon, or Martin's going to do me a quick reminder for the Patreon.
It is patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Lovely stuff. So all that's left for me to do then is to say thank you to Dan.
Cheers, Toldo.
Thank you to Martin.
Thank you as well, Toldo.
And thank you everyone for listening. Bye.